Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Oh, welcome in. You are listening to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm your host, Corey Fleck, and I will be talking about the markets and still with quite a focus on the precious metals in this first hour. I also do want to mention that we have been having some trouble getting the full hour long uploaded to the podcast. We're still working on that, but some back-end website updates seem to be messing a little bit with what goes on in iTunes, but I do appreciate all of the emails from everybody, and I always love hearing from everyone, so please keep the emails coming, fleck@kereport.com. I am kicking off the show with Byron King. He is the co-editor of The Gold Speculator, writes that along with Jim Rickards. And Byron, you and I were both at a couple conferences just this last weekend in Vancouver. And one thing that really stood out to me, at least, is that the only thing that is helping to drive any stocks in the resource sector when it comes to juniors is true exploration drilling. Is that what you're finding as well?
Yes. First, it's really nice to talk with you. It's been too long. We should do this more often. Now, as far as your question goes, what I detected was a real desire of companies to be known as explorers versus developers. It's kind of like everybody has seen that sort of like S curve that sort of set on its side, the Lassonde curve. That when you're an exciting explorer, your share price goes up, 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 up. And then when you transition over to being a boring, de-risking developer, your share price goes down, 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 down. And then as you start to build your mine or whatever, then, you know, then finally you get kicked back up because you're being re-rated as a real mine, you know. So everybody wants to be an explorer. Nobody wants to be a developer. And we really don't have that many companies that have made a transition from explore to develop to produce. Although we've talked about this before, you know how much I like Victoria Gold in the Yukon, which has gone from explorer to developer, and they're building their mine, and it's going to be up and running, stacking ore in the end of June of this year. Nobody wants to be a developer. Everyone wants to be an explorer. It's very strange that it's good in the sense that, you know, explorers are doing the things explorers should do. Everybody seems to have read the same textbook. You know, we're going to go out there. You know, first you secure your title, of course. You know, then you get your First Nations issues squared away. You make sure that there's no huge environmental, you know, problems. Because if you don't have that, then it really doesn't matter what you've got. Then you go out there and you start to get into the rocks. You do your geochemistry. You do your geophysics. You finish your mapping. You do your trenching. You do your drilling. There's a whole series of steps that you need to take, all of which, you know, depending where you are, depending the geology, can deliver you, you know, a package that you can take to the market and impress everybody, and that's a good thing. I guess I'll kind of cap this off by saying one of the things that explorers need to remember to do, though, is to de-risk themselves along the way, because it doesn't matter how great an explorer you are, no matter how many wonderful holes you pull out of the ground or how many trenches you dug that revealed something, there are just other aspects of de-risking that you need to do to get yourself to become more than just an interesting science project, you know, an interesting geological experiment that we found some really interesting mineralogy out in the woods someplace, you know what I mean?
I do absolutely know what you mean, and that's unfortunately been a problem for some of these companies, is that we see a nice discovery hole and even a couple holes to follow up on that, but then in the prior year and the next drill program, the company goes about with more of an infill drill program to still possibly expand the resource, but that really de-risks it. However, that only seems to hurt the share price as we see share prices trickle down. How important is it for you to, first of all, understand that the company is focused on still de-risking, but understanding that they're draining their cash and their share price is going down?
Well, yes. The de-risking, I think, is very important because we actually saw a hint of this or a reflection of this in the Newmont Gold Corp deal. I mean, you know, we're moving from juniors to the big guys now, to the multi-billion dollar guys. But, you know, Gold Corp has done a not as good job, let's just say. I'm not going to defame anybody, but just say that they haven't done such a nice job for their shareholders for the last 5 years. I mean, they used to be an almost $30 stock, and they're getting bought at like 10, you know, or 10 or 11 bucks, you know. Gold Corp produced a lot of gold. They made a lot of, you know, they've covered a lot of projects, had done a lot of things, but somehow or another, they just never really delivered that kind of shareholder return that, you know, the people want to see. Newmont, by contrast, is very focused on, you know, we don't care what the price of gold is. We just assume we're working with $1,200 gold, and we just want to make sure we can make our 15%, you know, return on investment, you know, rate of return for what we're doing. And so Newmont has done well in terms of maintaining its shareholder value through the last couple of years, which were very tough. I mean, a lot of big companies, you know, gold mining types, they lost shareholder value. Newmont, you know, kind of maintained it. And so here's Newmont buying the Goldcorp assets at a tremendous discount compared with a couple of years ago. Newmont will do what, you know, what happens in these kind of things. They'll lay people off here and there. They'll shed some non-core assets or tier three, maybe tier two assets, whatever. You know, get rid of those babies. But they'll take the best of the Goldcorp stable, the best horses of that stable, and they'll run them in a Newmontian kind of way, and, you know, make their 15% or more. So in terms of de-risking, you know, using those big guys, the big elephants, as an example, the small guys, you need to de-risk too. They need to de-risk along the way. I mean, you want to give you an example of an explorer who has really done a nice de-risking effort?
Yeah, a couple examples if you can, but let's start with one.
Okay, Sabina Gold, up in Nunavut, in the way north in Canada. I mean, it's a snowball's throw to the Arctic Circle up there. It's Precambrian rock. It's banded iron formations, gold-infused banded iron formations. Classic Precambrian BIF. It's great stuff. Same rock as the Homestake mine in South Dakota. I mean, it's different rock. I mean, it's 2,000 miles away, you know, but in terms of like the geologic style and everything, you know, banded iron formation, that was Homestake, 125-year mine life, 50 million ounces at Homestake, South Dakota. These guys, Sabina, are working in banded iron formations in banded, you know, up in the north there. Okay, lots of logistical problems. I mean, first thing you say when you see this company and hear about it is like, oh, geez, you mean they're up like where Santa Claus lives, man. You know, you look out and you see Santa's reindeer, you know, grazing on the snow. I mean, this place is far away. But they've done a great job, fabulous job geologically, fabulous job in terms of building a resource, 7 million ounces, not too shabby, high grade. So you're far north, you need a cold weather miner, lots of ounces, good grade. Now what? They're still an explorer, but last year, this 2018, they built a pier facility, you know, and I'm not going to call it a port, but a pier facility, you know, nearby to where their locale is up there. And it's in this incredibly interesting body of water. You've got about 100 feet of water depth within just a few feet of the shore. You know, the water, it's a drowned valley, a drowned, like a glacial fjord or an old drowned river valley. So now you can bring your materials up there by barge during the ice-free season, May, June, July, August, September. You bring your stuff up there and stage everything, the heavy equipment, all that. So in addition to drilling holes and finding gold, high-grade gold, lots of it, Sabina has managed to de-risk the project in a logistical sense. I mean, none of it is Nunavut. I mean, there is not a single road from outside of Nunavut into Nunavut. You know, that's just the nature of the geography. So if you're going to work there, you have to fly everything in, or you have to ship it in by, you know, barge or ship during the ice-free season. So here's an example of a company that is an explorer. They've done a great, you know, great geology program, great chemistry program, incredible geophysics, really nice drilling program that's found a lot of gold, and they de-risked the whole project in a logistical sense. Love it.
So, Byron, what about another company that you can maybe share with us that doesn't have the same logistical issues? I know that a lot of our listeners still are being very selective and want to choose areas where maybe it's a little bit cheaper to work.
Okay, try this one. Let's go down a little south here to Quebec, a little bit north of Val d'Or, you know, classic old Precambrian Val d'Or geology. Let's go about, I'm not sure how it's like 70, no. About 40 miles north of Val d'Or, Maple Gold, right near Amos, just north of Amos, Quebec, Maple. Maple is working in, gold-infused sort of, it's a volcanic-hosted gold body. The geology, the structure, the gold, the chemistry is very similar to a mine down, you know, near Val d'Or called the Canadian Malartic mine, which is something, what is it, like 750,000 ounces a year. It's the largest producing gold mine in Canada, Canadian Malartic. That is the model. That's the geologic model. Maple is working up north in very similar sediments, volcanics versus sediments, but very similar rock styles, very similar mineralogical model. And they have spent the last year or so doing some very, very targeted drilling, but really cleaning up the overall geologic model. And again, de-risking the model with a very, very selective, very judicious drilling, mapping, sampling, chemistry, geophysics where appropriate, putting it all together to make this model work. And between a year ago and between now, they are a much, much, much better company at a much, much, much lower share price, regrettably. I view Maple right now as a terrific, bargain with a lot of upside potential, because their next move and this is a key move for these guys. What they absolutely have to do, they have to bring in some sort of a strategic partner, to put some money on the table, write a check for whatever number that might be. I mean, we're not going to quibble over it on the, on the interview here with you or with anybody else, but they do need some outside money. They really cannot afford to raise money right now and dilute the shareholders. But it's a company that is an explorer, but it's been de-risking itself through better modeling and just better thinking over the last year, and they're ready to go. They need an outside, third party partner to come in and, write them a check. But when that happens, because I do think it's going to happen, you're going to be owning a share or owning a piece of something that is the analog to the largest producing gold mine in Canada down at Malartic.
All right, Byron, we are out of time for this segment, but I do appreciate all of your insights, and I always enjoy reading over your newsletter. In full disclosure, I do hold Maple Gold Mine shares, so just wanted to throw that out there, but it's encouraging to hear you and some other people talking about not just that company, but a few other companies, because this is the time to be very selective in terms of your investments. Byron, great chatting with you. Thanks again for your time this weekend.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.